Blog Talk Radio.
Find yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger. When it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Monday, June 20th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the world. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. Most of the time, the chat room automatically opens up. Just scroll down a little bit. You'll see it. Do take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about our passion and hobby of backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, preparedness, and a whole lot more. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust. Looking for something? Find it online at BidBird Auctions. BidBird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made BidBird Auctions their new home. And get sold on BidBird.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, the only Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer show nationwide, worldwide, all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainability, urban farming, urban gardening, and a whole lot more. We've also given away more chicken coops than anybody on the planet. We've given away more chicken-related prizes than anybody on the planet, thanks to our awesome sponsors. Speaking of awesome, it is now time to bring on my poultry advocate and author, all around multi-talented young lady, Pat Borman. Hey, Pat. Pat Borman.
Is this a game?
There you go.
I don't know what happened. I wasn't muted out. I was. Are you playing a game with me now, aren't you? You're playing.
No. I didn't hear you. So nope, you're right there with us. So cool. No, you're there now. There's your there's that voice, that unforgettable
whatever voice. I know. It's an alto voice. What can I say? Hey, can you hear this?
I sure can. Somebody's got some baby chicks.
Well, remember those that I set in the incubator on Memorial Day?
Yes, I remember.
Well, here they are. This is when Jen was supposed to be hatching, too, if you'll remember. That seems like ancient history, doesn't it?
I'm telling you what.
Yeah. And I've got one here that literally just popped out within 30 seconds. And it's just amazing. I'm never not in awe of these little chicks when they come out. Wow. Let me put the top back down so they don't get chilled. But
what kind you got there? Do you have some of your Chanticleers hatching out?
Yes, may we say those Chanticleer? Yes, they're all sort of in theory Chanticleer. Of course, I have a rooster that jumps the fence a little bit to get in with the Chanticleers. But yeah, they're all little beige blonde. Buff Chanticleers, which aren't recognized yet by the APA, American Poultry Association, and so they're from a trio I picked up 2 years ago, I guess, at the I just can't stop looking at them at the Columbus National Show. They are just, oh God, they're so cute. I don't know. They're just so cute. Yeah, it just brings. So I'm playing around with different ways to graft these little chicks onto hens. And I tried this morning. It was quite a I thought, well, I'll leave the fake eggs under this broody hen, and I'll just slip a few chicks under there after she has her break. And so I slipped them under there, and she settled down and seemed about half asleep. And when I went back to, I watched her for about half an hour. Everything seemed fine. And I left, silly me, I did leave the door to the little kennel. But when I went back, she was on top of the kennel next to it. She left them. And they were there, fine, just looking around. But she had totally gotten off. These are just hours old. So I thought, I got to learn to close the door. Somehow keep them in a closed cage, I think, is one of the lessons from grafting, getting chicks under the mothers. So anyway, I'm going to be playing with that over the next few days, just seeing ways that work and ways that don't. So we'll see. That's kind of my plan anyway. How are you doing today? You all settled in, unpacked, everything cozy?
Yeah, right.
No, we can't really start unpacking until we get the carpet in. Carpet's coming tomorrow, so all the bedrooms and the living room all have to be completely empty for that. So we haven't even attempted to start unpacking and wasting our time doing that. So, yeah, pretty much two U-Haul trucks full are just sitting there in boxes. And after tomorrow, when we get the carpet in and get the main furniture kind of set where it needs to go in the house, then we'll start maybe doing a little unpacking. But I tell you, we won't be doing a lot of unpacking. Well, we'll be unpacking, but it'll be going right out to the garage where our big garage sale is what the majority stuff was going to be going. So, yeah, we're going to have probably the biggest garage sale this side of the Mississippi here come in about a month or so. So we got that kind of working for us. But, yeah, we're still doing some finishing up the upgrades. Like I said, we had a really slow contractor that worked at his own pace and put us behind.
That's most of them, I've got to tell you.
So we
what they do.
Yeah, except when it comes to their money. You know, if you're ever
that's
if
right.
you can't run behind, you can't be late, you have to be on schedule with the money, but they choose not to be on schedule with their work. So it's funny how it works that way. But no, I think we've got a good one now, and he was out here Saturday and plugging away at a lot of things on our list. So but we're doing well. In fact, the carpet we got, Pat, is actually made made from recycled plastic bottles, wasn't it? Yeah, so
really?
So we've got a green certified carpet coming, and it was made from recycled plastic bottles. So we're anxious to see that and get that, trying to be as green as possible. So that was one reason why we picked out what we did, and get that done. So, but yeah, it's a slow process. I did go down to the Mid Georgia Farm. Mid Georgia Farm Service store. Anyway, a good farm store today. So I hadn't been to that one before. And wait just a minute here. Let me see something. How are you logged in?
As co-host, I think.
Okay, because it's not letting me log in. It says someone else is logged in. So
oh,
I just
let me log off.
Okay.
Hold on.
To the chat room. Huh?
Well, my chat room is. Oh, okay. I'll log out.
Log out, and then I'll log in. Then you log back in as co-host. We'll try that, and let me get in there first and see how that happens. So, okay, let's see what we got there. Yep, there we go. Perfect. Okay, now you do the same thing there on the switchboard. Just go down, click that.
Boy, you are fast. Okay.
You're not the only young lady that's told me that, Pat.
Oh, that was her.
Very, very good.
There we go.
Hang on just a second. Get these technical difficulties worked out. Anyway, do you have a good weekend, Pat?
I really did. I had so much fun. I went to the Humane Society, the Society for Protection of Cruelty to Animals, the SPCA, was having a yard sale. So I went over Friday afternoon and helped them just price things and set things up, and then was there early Saturday morning when all the crowds were lined up just to kind of do final details. And then at the end of it all, at 2 Saturday, my gosh, you would have thought everything could be gone because they price things really cheaply, but But no, they had to pack it all up in a truck to send to Goodwill. And it was just incredible. I almost think people are starting to get stuffed out. You know, it's like too much stuff, just stuff, stuff, stuff. There was some really nice stuff, too, but stuff and stuff. But one of the things I got was a little one of those little dog beds. It's like a hammock, mm-hmm. Kind of a large one. So my dogs were sleeping on an old mattress, that little single mattress. I'm just going to take that over to probably Habitat or Goodwill, and they can start sleeping in this sling, and they love it. They've been on, you know, didn't even hesitate to get on it. So that's kind of what I did in the weekend. There was a housewarming party that was an awfully good time. It was a really gorgeous house. And what was interesting when I got there, it's like the entire YMCA was there. All these fit people were walking around. Most of the connections were from the gym. So everyone had a really good time with that.
Well, I have a special announcement to make for everybody who's listening live out there in Radio Land, and all of those who actually listen to the archives as well, and those in the chat room. Some of you already know in the chat room, but today is my lovely wife's birthday.
Oh!
So have to wish her a good happy birthday out there in Radio Land, and she's hanging in there. A little tired today. She had a tough long weekend and a busy weekend, so I'm sure a nap is in her future. But while I was in town, I stopped by the old Choke and Puke. I got that from that. What was that movie, Jen? Smoking the Bandit. Yeah, Smoking the Bandit. When they're talking, I'm gonna drop the old lady off up here at the old Choke and Puke, and I'll be back on the road here shortly. So I stopped by the old local Choke and Puke, and I got her some. We deviated today since it's her birthday off of our organic diet, but I got her some good old locally cooked fried chicken. And now she says her tummy hurts. But of course, you know, when you do that, when you eat healthy and you're used to fruit and vegetables and lean meats and whatnot, and then fill it full of greasy fried chicken, then that's going to happen.
That is
going to happen. So happy birthday to her. And today is June 20th. It is Monday. We've got a great show lined up for everybody today. We've got great programming all week long. I have some not-so-savory news that tomorrow we were going to welcome Tiny Revolution, Andrew Odom. But he's got a webinar that he has to do for some training tomorrow during our show. So we will have another guest tomorrow. No worries there. And but Wednesday, it looks like, let's see what we got. It looks like on Wednesday we'll have Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. And then Thursday we're going to have, I'm really excited about Thursday, Pat. We'll have Richard Frudenberger with Back Home Magazine on, talking about homemade insect repellent. So that's going to interest everybody this Thursday. And then another awesome, fun Friday. But I will have a guest. I've got it on my to-do list today, and I've got two in mind, actually, for tomorrow's show. So we've got a great show lined up for you all week long. We hope you can join us every day, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a lot of great prizes, actually, to give away. And including today, we've got a Hen Saver Hen Apron from Crazy Cray Farm around 1:20 Eastern. We'll actually have our chicken trivia contest. We'll have a question. We'll see who knows the answer, and they will get a Hen Saver Hen Apron from our good friends over at Crazy Cray Farm. So we've got that going on today. Tomorrow, of course, just to give you a heads up, we'll have a great prize from eggcartons.com. Everybody loves those prizes as well. Wednesday, a prize from Ware Manufacturing. Thursday, we got a prize from critter-cages.com. And then Friday, we have a whole array of prizes for Fun Friday. And in between, lots of good education from experts in their field about backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, preparedness, and a whole lot more. So that's what we've got going on. Now, see, I'm getting another message. Another user has logged on using this account. You are disconnected.
You are disconnected, or the other user is disconnected?
I got disconnected, so that's really weird. Let me go ahead and try it.
I'm taking it personally. I'm still here on the switchboard. Well, now, I just got that notice too. Whisper, another user is logged in using their account. I am disconnected.
So I wonder if.
So I can't be on the switchboard and in the chat room at the same time. Is that what it is?
Yeah, you can. You just have to click on click that button. You just have to click that button, log in to chat as co-host on the switchboard.
Oh.
So okay. When you get back on the switchboard, scroll down a little bit.
There it is. Start chat session.
Nope, you don't want to click that.
Log in as co-host.
Nope,
okay.
You want to click log in as co-host first.
Got it.
And once that box is checked, then you click on start chat session.
Okay, well, I'm back in the chat room. Are you in there?
I should be. Yep, there you go. See,
yep,
co-host.
There. Okay.
Yep, co-host. That was the problem. So there we go. Fix it. We can fix anything if we put our mind to it.
Oh, dear. Feels like a Monday, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Things are a little slow if you're getting started. It's
I love Sarah's comment. Pat is secretly planning a coup to take over as the Chicken Whisperer.
Oh, no. I have no desire to do that. No, Chicken Shouter.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Now, if she would have put chicken chowder down there in lunchtime, I could deal with a little chicken chowder right now. That would be in a bread bowl. How about some good old chicken corn chowder in a bread bowl? Now if that doesn't make my listeners hungry, I don't know what will. What kind of chickens in the news do you have for us today, Pat?
Well, I didn't have much. There's the usual in there about how prices are going up and down and all around, and. It sounds like Delmarva was a huge event. Really, really.
I would
big.
Like to have seen that 10-foot frying pan they had up there at the chicken festival.
Really? I mean, really? That must have been pretty big.
It says that they fried about 6 tons of chicken or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, can you have 6 tons of chicken? How many chickens would that be? I can do a quick calculation.
It was 3 tons. Maybe it was 3 tons. It was either 3 tons or 6 tons. Maybe it was 3 tons, 6,000 pounds. Maybe that was it. 6,000 pounds, 3 tons of chickens were going to be fried over the weekend. So, that would have been a humdinger.
That's a lot of chickens. That's a lot of chickens. The only chickens in the news that I kind of came up with was a little more on this arsenic. The comments, I guess you'd say, on the arsenic that they're voluntarily withdrawing. And for our listeners that haven't known, the brand named Roxrasone, an arsenic-containing product, has been withdrawn from animal feeds. It's been approved for 47 years by FDA. It's been withdrawn because when FDA tested 100 chickens, they found, indeed, arsenic was in the chicken tissue. So it's remaining that it goes in the food supply. And then, of course, arsenic has to go somewhere else. A lot of the rest of it was excreted in the poo. So where does it go from there? Well, there's real concerns about our environment and destroying ecosystems and polluting water courses and ending up in feeds, perhaps even from growing the ground up. But anyway, the statistic I found from this one particular blog, it says they estimate that about 2.2 million pounds of arsenic feed additives are used by the poultry industry each year. 2.2 million pounds of arsenic feed additives. That's not the feed itself, that's the feed additives. And, of course, it's not over. The concern is there are several countries where it's still permitted. And if we know it's a bad thing here and they're voluntarily taking it off in 30 days, why not discontinue it for all throughout the world? It's banned in Europe. So why not just acknowledge that it's not a healthy product to be adding to foods? That's the only thing I've got. And I think, you know, until this arsenic thing gets resolved, it's going to continue. What do you got, Whisper?
Not a thing. It was, like you said, it was very, very light. I combed over a lot of the chickens in the news, and it was very light, so I didn't want to waste anybody's time. I just wanted to make sure all of our chickens in the news is pertinent. But really, there wasn't really anything much over the weekend that would spark interest to share as chickens in the news. So we'll keep scaling all the news sources and see seeing what we can find. But yeah, the arsenic, that's we've been covering that for a long time. Someone had posted that on our Facebook page. They saw something about it and asked if we had heard about that, and I politely responded. I said, you know, we've been covering that for about a year, maybe even over a year now, and we've been covering that, and Pat's done a fabulous job with giving us all the updates. So it's you know, though, I find it funny, though, on one of the chickens in the news, Pat, one of the takes was that FDA is banning arsenic in chicken feed, kind of like they're being the hero. Kind of like the hero here is FDA by swarming in and saving us all from this additive that ends up being arsenic in our chicken. And so the article was written almost like FDA as the hero, when I had to make it very clear on that post that FDA were the ones that initially and originally approved this drug for what it is and what it does, and so they are more to blame because it was approved as safe and wonderful for everybody, just like many other drugs now that are being recalled by the FDA that humans have been taking that have killed people, that was once approved by the FDA. So I took an anger to that article when they tried to make FDA the hero by banning this from chicken feed, when they're the ones that approved this ingredient to begin with as being safe and having no problems. So, you know, it makes you wonder what other things out there that have been approved by the FDA is actually killing us, like Teflon-coated cooking pans, you know, the stuff that's in our plastics that when you heat them up. I saw an article, and we should have had this for Chickens of the News. I didn't see if it was very credible or not, so I did not repost it, but it said something like, microwaved water kills plants. And so just from the picture I saw and the title, it looked like they would microwave water, and then once it had cooled down, you know, water the plants with water that had been microwaved and water that had not been microwaved. And the study, again, I didn't read it. I just didn't know if it was legitimate or not, claimed that the plants that were watered with the microwaved water all died. So,
yeah.
You know.
Well, there might be something to that, Whisper. If you watch a movie called What the Bleep, B-L-E-E-P, What the Bleep Do We Know? It talks about how water can have different characteristics depending on where it comes from and how it's treated. So it does change the – I mean, that's what microwaves do, is change the molecular structure of things. But anyway, I don't drink microwave water, do you?
No. No, I don't. I surely don't. In fact, I now cook in cast iron, so I threw away all that other junk, the aluminum pan, all of that's gone. I threw away some, and then some's going in the garage sale, it's just cast iron.
Good for you.
That's it, cast iron.
Well, what was so scary about the arsenic? I mean, this has been going on, like you said, for years, since 1947, is that the FDA assured everyone that none of the arsenic stayed in the meat. It was all excreted. Of course, again, where does it go? But
liars!
Well, I don't know about liars, but that might have been the science they had at the time, or maybe they just didn't look, or if they did look, maybe they just didn't see. You know, there's that saying, you'll see it when you believe it.
Yeah. or maybe, you know, what would we actually see? There's $1 million dangling over here, and then there's the factual information that arsenic doesn't stay in the meat over here, and you look one way and you see $1 million of hush money, and then over here you see a study that says the arsenic stays in the meat. No, I don't see that over there. I don't see that over there, but I do see this $1 million over here. So, interesting. I'm not claiming anything. I'm just saying that, you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, well, if you look at, I mean, I don't know if this is a problem or not, but when you look at a lot of the organic fertilizers that are on the market, if you look, they're poultry litter based, and there's nothing on there that says whether they're tested for arsenic or not. It's just not even included on the labeling. It never has been on the labeling for arsenic or on animal feeds. They'll list a lot of the other minerals and vitamins and protein and that sort of thing, but there's never been a line item for arsenic. So watch out. It may or may not be there in poultry litter-based organic organic feeds. It just hasn't been. I've never seen it.
No. Makes you go, makes you go, All righty, well, it's about half past
the hour. Makes you want to grow your own food, doesn't it?
Yeah, you got that right,
yeah.
Without a doubt,
yeah.
Without a doubt. It's about half past the hour, so we're going to go to a commercial break. This is, we have some host chat time, we had some chickens in the news, and now it's time to take a commercial break, and then we come back, we are going to welcome our guest for today. So you want to stay with us, we've got a great show lined up, and we'll be back right after this short break from our sponsors.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waterers, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. All righty, it is now time. It is our guest segment. And so, Pat, I'm going to let you do the honors here and welcome on our guest for today. Anxious to hear a lot about our topics today. Very interesting. Get that CW spiral notebook out, people. You're going to want to take a lot of notes. Very, very interesting subjects we'll talk about today. And so, Pat, bring on our wonderful guest for today.
Okay. Well, Emily, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, great. Okay, let me introduce you, Emily, because you've got just an amazing background. Our guest today is Dr. Emily Lilly. She earned her PhD in biological oceanography at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and she's held the NASA Exobiology Postdoctoral Fellowship at Harvard. I could repeat that if people want. So he had the postdoctoral fellowship at Harvard. And so she's now working at Virginia Military Institute, where she teaches biology, molecular biology, genetics, genomics, and cell biology. So Dr. Lilly, welcome to our show. May I call you Emily?
I think that would be a good idea.
Okay, thanks. Well, my goodness, and I have to tell you, I met Emily through some Java chickens was our connections. Emily, why don't you tell them about how you came into contact with some Java chickens and sort of how our circles tended to overlap.
Well, I first heard about the Javas actually through the Auburn Javas. I had known of the breed and the blacks and the model Javas before. And, I mean, even as a breed goes, they're pretty cool. I think they're, the second oldest American breed?
Mm-hmm.
Auburn Javas were, I guess, originally used to create some of the classic American breeds, like the Rhode Island Red.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Auburn color stock had been lost, and all we had were the blacks and the models. And then the whites resurfaced with some recessive genes, and there seem to be some recessive gene pools hanging out that may represent the original genetic variety of the Auburns.
Oh.
So there's been a project trying to weed out the black genes and see if an Auburn can be uncovered.
And doggone if some of those that you got don't have that Auburn patterning and the color.
Yep. I mean, it's hard to say if they'd ever be exactly like what the Auburns were like 100 years ago, because there aren't any photographs. But you can look based on some descriptions and look at different colors of birds. And I think it's just fascinating to see what kind of diversity is sometimes laying in there undiscovered in our domestic animals.
Yeah. What happened then is Emily moved into town and couldn't keep her Java chicks. And so I'm chick sitting, and there's four of them that are showing that sort of the Auburn kind of coloring to the extent that I can recognize it anyway. So there you have it. They're doing fine. Wondering what to do with them. I'll get in touch with the ALBC and see who's down there to maybe see if they want to put them back into the gene pool. Yeah. Okay. Emily, tell us about, you've been studying genetics for such a long
mm-hmm.
time, but also about the long time that chicken genetics have been used as experiments, including going back to dinosaurs. Tell us about the chickens as Drosophila or fruit flies, and then talk a little bit about their links back to dinosaurs.
Well, a lot of people have probably heard of Mendel and the peas.
Mm-hmm.
As your, first genetic model organism. And it turns out that the first animal that was used to study genetics was the chicken. So there's a lot of work coming out of around the 1920s looking at different comb shapes and color patterns and looking at the genetics that were involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the chicken makes a wonderful organism for looking at developments because you've got a little embryo growing in an egg, and it's easy to visualize.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually quite heavily used as a genetic model organism. Fruit flies grow faster, though. You can go from an egg to an adult in 2 weeks. You're going to have to wait a lot more than 2 weeks.
Chicken.
Yeah, you're going to be waiting 21 days plus the 5 to 6 months before the pullet's going to lay anything for you. So you'll be waiting a while.
That's right. Huh. So now with the genetics, the genome project with poultry, is that opening up a lot of new ground for poultry research?
You know, it really is. One of the things they've been doing is comparing the differences in the genomes between different types of chickens. They did a comparison between an egg-laying strain a broiler mm-hmm. strain, and then they put in a silky chicken, just, I guess, as the fluff strain. And looking at the molecular differences between those to try to get a handle on what exactly it is that causes the traits the industry finds desirable, like mm-hmm. laying many eggs of large size.
Mm-hmm. So, and
what
they find?
Well, actually, the genetic diversity in the chicken is much greater than I would have expected.
Really?
I think they found over 70,000 single nucleotide or individual differences between these genomes, and that's a staggering number, even when you consider that there are billions of pieces in a genome.
Well, how does that compare to people? I mean, do we have 70,000? We have more.
The chicken genome is about a third the size of ours. So the chicken genome's about 1.2 gigabases, and we're at like 2.9 gigabases. So it's smaller. But
a gigabase is the number of genomes. Is that?
Think of it like with computers, right? You've got a byte, and then you can have a kilobyte and a megabyte and a gigabyte. And it's the same thing with how much DNA you have. One base is just one little nucleotide, and it doesn't mean anything by itself. It doesn't carry any information, just like one byte of a computer code wouldn't mean anything. But when you put together thousands, then millions, then trillions of them, you start getting to information that means something.
Okay.
So it's a way to quantify how much information is stored in that genome. Or how much space it takes up.
And then how do they sample the genome? Do they say, like in people, don't they take saliva or some skin cells? How do they do it in chickens?
Well, you can do it any way you want, really. The easiest thing is with blood.
Okay.
But you could use pretty much any tissue type to get a genomic DNA from it. It's pretty easy to pull out of animal samples.
Okay, so if you use blood versus like saliva or skin, they would all give you the same genome set.
It would, but can you imagine trying to collect chicken saliva?
Well, I know they use that in people.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not collecting the chicken saliva.
No. Oh, dear.
So you got to go with something you can get a fairly good quantity of, and it's easy to get a quantity of chicken blood. You can even get it without necessarily, I wouldn't say without harming the chicken, because the chicken probably notices, but you can keep your chicken alive and still take a large enough blood sample to...
How big is big to sample?
Well, it depends on what you're going to do with it. For most purposes, for what you're going to be using for our DNA technologies, you don't really need that much. You can do a lot with a milliliter.
Okay, that's what I was... One milliliter would sort of... Well, you can get that out of a wing pretty easily.
It's a tiny amount.
And then what would be considered a big amount, Emily?
I don't know, actually, what the volume of blood is in a chicken.
Oh, I don't either. Never been asked that.
I've never measured.
It doesn't really matter, but it seems like an awful lot when you're processing them.
Yeah, but, you know, blood has a tendency to seem like more than it is.
It goes spreads around. Well, interesting. Okay, now do you use the chicken genome in your teachings, but in your classes? Do you use anything with chickens?
I use a lot of chicken examples. I think my students might have been a little tired of the pictures of my chickens I kept showing them, but there are a lot of really cool things to study with genetics in chickens. You know, things like egg color and feather color are fun, but you can also start talking about, you know, complex traits that have a lot of genes involved with them, like egg production or meat production and traits that have been selected for in the commercial industries as well. So, yeah, was listening to you and the Chicken Whisperer talking about the Roxersone earlier, and it reminded me of something I had spotted in the scientific literature not too long ago, having to do with genetics.
Uh-huh.
There was a group over in China that did an expression analysis of what actually happens to the genes of the chicken when you give them roxazone.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And what they found is that there are 22 genes that are used differently in the birds that are getting the roxazone. So some are turned on, so you have more of that gene, and some are gene expression, and some are downregulated, so you've got less of whatever product that gene makes. But what they've been able to do is pull out which genes are affected by this arsenic-containing toxic chemical.
Wow.
And you could potentially then take that information and find a way to create those same beneficial effects without the arsenic.
Huh.
Which I think is a really cool example of how that genome project is being used in ways that might actually benefit people.
That's a real showstopper there, Emily. I mean, the beneficial effects, of course, were weight gain and controlling coccidiosis. And,
right.
So to think that you could do that through genetics instead of through something external like roxazone or antibiotics or whatever
mm-hmm.
would be used, or arsenic. Huh.
Now, of course, the challenge is to figure out which of those genes is responsible for things like greater growth, and which might be responsible for merely trying to handle the toxic chemical we've tossed in the chicken.
That's right. That's a good point. Which genes had to just be tossed to the chicken?
Yeah, I mean, not all of those genes are necessarily going to be the ones making the beneficial traits, but once you've got a set, 22 isn't that many. It's pretty easy to start working through that 22 and figuring out what you might have going on and which ones might be beneficial to manipulate without having to then provide roxazone or other toxic chemical.
Hmm. Wow. So it is opening up a whole new world of genetics for just about every species, isn't it? I mean, if we can manipulate it like that, to that level, that's mind-boggling. I mean, I can't even almost grasp that.
Yeah,
of course, in humans too, so depending on what you eat, certain genes are turned on or off,
mm-hmm.
depending on how the food affects your body and how your body can detox or regulate it or down-regulate it or up-regulate it. So it's kind of hard in so many ways to separate the genotype from the phenotype. Because
Very complicated.
Yeah.
The biggest complication is that a lot of the genes interact with one another. So even something simple like, you know, is it a brown egg or a white egg? There are a large number of genes
where he's going to look at my bush hog.
That work in with that.
He's there on Jones Ridge, but old Alabama. I think he went too far.
Well, and he's gone too far with his bush hog, huh?
Apparently.
Hey,
so.
Andy.
I'm here. Yes, ma'am.
Andy, did your bush hog run away?
Huh? Oh no! I had to tell Jen to take this call. I got a guy wanting to come and look at it and purchase it. So I had to tell her to step out so she could give him directions. He was lost.
Okay. Oh, that was funny. Okay, sorry about that, Emily.
Quite all right.
We often have background sounds that we don't know it's like little baby chicks peeping.
Well, what better background sound is there than little baby chicks peeping?
I know. I can just spend hours just looking at them. So, yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, Emily, then you said about, we talked a little bit at lunch that day about the evolution of feathers.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us about that?
Well, feathers are really cool. I mean, we think of feathers as being associated with flight. But there are plenty of birds, including plenty of chickens, that can't really fly. And the feathers do other things. The feathers are good for insulation, to keep a bird warm. I mean, you've seen a cold bird fluffing up its feathers. And the feathers are also attractive. I mean, classic example is the peacock. With its clearly, display-oriented plumage.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look back, you know, to the ancestors of chickens, and we're talking the ancestors of birds back in the days of dinosaurs, it seems that feathers originally evolved for those other purposes besides flight, like coloration, mate attraction. and insulation. And that this flight advantage is a secondary thing that came along later.
Huh. Oh, wow, that's interesting. Well, I bet they also evolved for camouflage. Besides being attractive, they kind of want to hide. Then you get some partridge in the darker brown.
And you see that with chickens, too. I mean, if you look at the typical coloring of the jungle fowl hen, she's brown.
Right.
She'd blend in with the leaf litter while sitting on a nest. But you look at the male, and he's flashy. And, you know, his color is to stand out, not to blend in.
I know one thing, the white hens in my flock tend to get picked on more often by hawks than any other color.
They're easy to spot. It's an easy target.
Right.
And, you know, it explains one reason why you don't find white chickens running around in nature.
That's right. That's right. Not too many, anyway. Not too many.
No, they all get eaten.
So, yeah. Well, yeah. It's like, look here. Hard to hide even in the green. Look here. So if you had a feral white chickens, would they tend to go back to the darker colors naturally by selection,
well,
I guess? Or?
Well, that would depend on why they were white. Because there are two main ways to get white in a chicken.
Mm-hmm.
One is with a dominant gene that prevents the synthesis or the creation of pigment. And the other way is by breaking all the pigment genes so that they don't work anymore. And if what you've done is got a bunch of broken pigment genes, then that bird is stuck being white, and all its descendants would be white. Whereas
okay.
on the other hand, if what you have is this dominant white gene, they call it I for inhibition of pigment in chickens, that gene usually sits on top of other genes so that the chicken's ability to produce pigments is there. There's just this inhibitor telling it not to.
Okay, so that could be crossed over and produce those Mendelian
right.
patterns.
And the thing about that is it's dominant. So you could hide recessives in there that are able to produce pigment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a population like that, where there were some recessive individuals that produced pigment, I would imagine they'd survive a whole lot better than the white ones.
Hmm. Well, that makes sense.
But you know, it all depends on the genetics of the population that you started with.
That makes sense. Hmm. So, but if you crossed, I would guess, at one of the ones that had the broken pigment genes with one that, of course, that had the brown,
mm-hmm.
that eventually they would get back.
Yeah,
out, I guess. They're
yeah,
all
because you'd be adding those genes into the population, and they would be beneficial. But, I mean, one thing with genetics that it tells us is you can't put in a gene that's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, obviously, you create it in the lab and go and add it. But when you're dealing with traditional breeding programs, you work with the genes that are available to you.
Right, right. How many different breeds have they done the Genome Project on?
Well, they have only done the whole, like ran the whole genome sequence on one strain, which is actually from the from a group of feral red jungle fowls that was kept for a while. I think the strain actually comes out of UC Davis. But they've done the comparison where they sequenced the variable portions of the genome for the, like I said before, the broiler, the egg layer, and then the silky.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, the chicken genome, smaller than ours, but it's still pretty big.
Yeah,
and
70,000.
Well, that's the number of single base differences they found. I mean, the whole genome's much bigger than that.
Okay, single base differences. Differences. Gosh, how do you count
right.
that many differences?
You get the computer to count them for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, can you run a gene sequence in your lab at VMI?
I could, yeah.
Really?
Although I've got a gene sequencer here, although it's sometimes quicker and less expensive to send it out. Because there are labs that do this. I mean, it's their business. They do it for a living, and they run thousands and thousands of these per day. So you can send off some material to a gene sequencing lab and get your data the next day.
There was an interesting question in the chat room about the genetic predisposition of certain breeds to be more vulnerable to, they put coccidiosis, but I guess disease in general. Is there a lot of research being done saying, well, this breed for some reason seems to get this disease more or that disease more, or this particular gene, they seem to have maybe liver problems more, or, you know, or whatever the case may, not necessarily liver problems, but what kind of any type of research regarding disease and breed selection?
Yep. Well, that's actually one of the big issues in industry, because obviously if you're trying to make a profit off your birds and you're losing them to disease, that's going to cut into your profit.
Sure.
And then, of course, as far as the backyard breeder goes, you don't want to see your cute little fluffy chicken die of coccidiosis. You know, that's just miserable. But there are some genetic predispositions. You know, if you happen to have a weakness in a particular area, that could cause a bird to be more likely to become sick. And it's the same as true in people, too. You have certain predispositions that might mean you're more likely to get cancer. Certain genotypes are more likely to get one disease or another. I mean, with coccidiosis, it's a parasite.
Correct.
Right. So you've got to have the parasite present to cause the disease. But it may be more likely to cause disease in some individuals than in others. Just like an AIDS patient is more likely to get a disease than someone with a healthy immune system. And now, obviously, with different breeds of chickens, it's going to be less severe than that, but they do have different genetic backgrounds, so some are going to be healthier than others. And in general, your more inbred lines are more susceptible to disease.
That makes sense. I mean, because they just don't have the variety with it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it goes with people, too. I mean, didn't they find, with the Russian, that hemophilia was spread along, and they ended up being pretty wimpy if they got sick, they'd bleed to death. Yeah.
Any recessive genetic disorder like that, when you add inbreeding, is going to be more common and will show up a lot more. Now, obviously, when you're breeding animals, it's different because you're going to select against animals that display those bad traits.
Hopefully. I don't know. I mean, if you look at what the American Cattle Association selects, hip dysplasia and noses that cause respiratory problems.
But, and you'll find the same thing in chickens, too. There are plenty of people that breed for appearance only.
Yeah. Yeah, they were just talking about that in the chat room, how there's some chickens tend to be really hardy and others are awfully fragile when it comes to their health. Yeah. Emily, there was a question, there was a comment more in the chat room. It says, would be taking out the genes in chickens be similar to making GMO corn in any way?
Well, it's going to depend on how you do it. For most GMO corn, the most common varieties of GMO corn, there's one that's resistant to Roundup. You've probably heard of Roundup Ready Corn.
Oh, yeah.
Boo.
So
Boo.
Heard of it, yeah. What they've done there is they've taken a gene and added it to the corn so that you could spray it with all the Roundup you want. It doesn't die. And the other variety is BT corn, where they've added this toxin from a bacterium that kills caterpillars. Right? So in both of those cases, what they've done is they've artificially added a gene from another species to give the corn a new trait. Now, with chickens, you could probably do that too. But when I was talking about, like, for example, the white coloration, those are mutations of genes, naturally appearing mutations that cause a certain gene product not to work anymore. And, I mean, most of the variety that we see in chickens is due to mutations of one sort or another. But you certainly could, if you were looking to find out the function of a gene, you certainly could go in and we call it knock out a certain gene, which means you selectively cause that gene not to work anymore.
But how do you do that?
It
sounds really complicated.
It can get complicated, yes, but it involves essentially manipulating the DNA so that you create a broken gene that you'll swap out with the gene that's functional if you wanted to knock out one particular gene.
Okay. Boy, this is the science all unto itself.
It gets complicated, but it's different because what you're doing there is you're removing a functional product. You're not adding a gene from a different species.
And here,
okay,
I wanted to do is collect some eggs for breakfast in the morning.
Yeah, I want some breakfast, huh?
All I wanted is some eggs for breakfast. Wow, this is, no, it's really, really interesting. It, you know, not to open up a controversial subject, but I will be 100% honest with you, and because maybe some of our listeners out there were thinking the same thing. This just popped into my head. Listening to all this, bringing in the GMO crop, you know, based crops, things like that, all this, we're trying to weed this out and weed that in. You know, and I don't want to open up a controversial subject, but I'm going to be honest with you and tell you what popped into my mind, and that would be Hitler. Except I think this, on the other hand, is doing it, I guess, for a positive reasons and positive research and to better chickens or what have you versus what he, of course, was trying to do back in the 30s and 40s. But that I'm going to be honest. That's the first thing that popped into my mind was, you know, Hitler and all the testing and things that they did back in Nazi Germany. But I understand. I guess the difference here is that other than, again, in my opinion, GMO corn and GMO salmon and all this stuff that I disagree with. But I guess in this case with the chickens trying to make a healthier chicken for which you said it, but more profit for the farmer. Or for the corporation, but also can be geared towards health, better health, the healthier chicken, a chicken that may live longer, may lay longer, may weed out some of the bad things, some of the health issues, and things like that. So I'm you know, obviously, and even with human research, the medicine, which just amazes me, things where I see they're doing brain surgery on people while they're awake, while they play a violin, while they're trying to fix a brain synapsis in there that makes something malfunction, and so literally he's this famous guy's playing his violin while they're doing brain. I mean, it's, don't get me wrong, it's absolutely amazing and awesome, and I think for if it get done, I guess for obviously the right reasons.
Well, I think it's like any technology out there; it could be used for good or for bad.
Exactly.
And you have to be careful with how you use it and how you apply it.
True.
So there are, you know, plenty of horrible things you could do with a knowledge of genomics, but there are also some really useful and beneficial things you can do.
Absolutely. How many – do you know a lot of breeders that have come to you around the country that say, you know, this is a chicken – I'm trying to develop this maybe for show purpose, maybe not for production, but for show. Have you run into that? And people who breed for showing, the fanciers, have they contacted you with questions like, if I really want to use, you know, this barred chicken, or I really want to do this frizzle, or, you know, I want to make the first modern frizzle – you know, whatever, silky, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Do you come into contact with a lot of them?
There's actually a really good chicken genetics calculator on the web. And if you run to this, if you just type in chicken genetics calculator, it pops up usually as the first thing on your list. It's a Kippen Jungle site, actually. And it's a great way to experiment like that with genes. Where you could find out if what you'll get for color patterns. And for most of the things that are done with color, it's actually a whole lot easier to breed in what you want than to go into the lab and selectively modify it. It's a whole lot less expensive, too. So, you know, if you want to get that dominant white gene in, go get a Leger and get that gene into your population that way. But,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, genetics are really very handy and useful for the show breeder because you can understand, you know, how it is you get the traits that you're looking for. You know, like feathered legs, dominant genes. So you can breed clean-legged chickens to clean-legged chickens all day long. You'll never get any with feathered legs.
Uh-huh. That makes sense.
Amazing.
Right? What are some of the... Emily, have you heard of the killer rooster problem in some of the breeds in industry?
Well, I've seen some mean roosters, but you'll have to tell me exactly what you mean.
Well, this was something that Temple Grandin wrote about in her book, Animals Make Us Human, about how they were finding these traits in these roosters that were just mean roosters, and they'd literally kill the hens. And rapist roosters, that's what she called them, is rapist roosters. Yeah, so now they're trying to figure out to get that trait out.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah,
but I think it's a side effect of the way we breed. Because in domestic chickens, we usually choose which rooster is going to sire the chicks.
Hmm.
We don't let the hen choose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you let the hen choose, she's going to pick the rooster with the best dance.
Oh,
we're
going
to
pick
the... Well, yeah, I mean, they dance for the hens. They show off. They bring them treats. You know, if they're trying to get the hen to choose that rooster. So if you look at jungle fowl populations, they actually do a lot of courting. But in barnyards, we say, I like that rooster best, haul the rest of them out of there, and you've picked the rooster that you want.
That's right.
So we've taken away the selection for those behaviors, and the hens are going to have to deal with whatever rooster we left them. So you end up with these bad behaviors in roosters because we haven't been selecting out the good ones.
And it's kind of hard to send them to a finishing school, isn't it? I mean, it's really nice.
I got to tell you, I have never been able to train my rooster to do much of anything. So.
What kind of
never
chickens
mind
do you
being nice.
Have, Emily? What kind of chickens do you have?
At the moment, I don't have any. I've moved into a city where they're illegal.
Illegal.
I have her chickens.
How dare they?
Yes. I ended up finding new homes for most of my birds. But I had a bunch of different birds. I had some Americanas and some Morans. I was playing with eggshell color because, you know, it's fun to play with genetics. And I had some bluish red Wyandottes, and I was playing with the blue jeans that way too. And then, of course, I had the Javas. So I had a variety of birds. I like a colorful egg basket.
Yeah. Isn't that a treat to get that colorful egg basket?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Neat. And then, of course, we're expecting chickens to be legal pretty soon here in Lexington over the next, say, 6 months or so. But I guess that's political
not
term.
Soon.
But what kind of chickens do you think you'll get? Of course, you can get some Javas. I've got these for you. But.
Mm-hmm. I love the Javas. They're very sweet. They have a very calm disposition, which I favor. I'm not that fond of roosters that go after people. And I've never seen that with the Java roosters, just one of the reasons why I like them. But I'd probably go for a variety. I mean, I like the diversity in a backyard flock.
Yeah.
You know,
I call them eye candy flock, where you've got...
Eye candy flock,
you know.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you're trying to, you know, work with an ALBC project or something like that to preserve a particular breed of chicken, you can't do that. But I always found, like when I was breeding Javas, I could throw in some of my eye candy hens because I wasn't going to set a green egg and think it was a Java egg.
Okay.
Right? So in your pen with your Java rooster and your Java hens, you can toss in some Easter eggers and some olive eggers and maybe some Morans or Welsmers.
Egg.
Right, because you can tell by the eggs. And when you're ready to set eggs or let a hen set on eggs for you, you can select out the light brown ones, and you'll only hatch Javas.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've got a couple other hens in with these Chanticleers because I like the cushion comb or the small comb for the for the frostbite protection. So I just go ahead and hatch some of those anyway, but I can tell which ones they are. But yeah, okay. Well, Whisper, we probably ought to honor our sponsors here with their messages. Why don't we do that and then come back and we can talk a little more about genetics and chickens. I mean, it's such a huge field. Our guest today is Emily Lilly. She is a PhD in just about everything to do with genetics.
Love it.
And we've been talking about the Genome Project and how chickens go back to feathered dinosaurs, and certainly about how the jungle fowl are the, sort of evolved. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size flock and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com.
This looks like a job for Super Chicken. You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
Oh, All righty. Welcome back to the Chicken Whisperer Backyard Poultry and Sustainable Lifestyles Talk Show. Our special guest today is Emily Lilly. She is a PhD in biological oceanography from MIT, and also studied at NASA, as well as had a Harvard Institute. She teaches genetics and genomes and everything biology at the Virginia Military Institute. So Professor Lilly, welcome back and talking with us about chicken genetics here today.
Thanks.
Okay. Would you tell us just a little bit about egg color genetics? Because I know we all love the different rainbow colored eggs when we open up that carton.
Mm-hmm.
But could you tell us a little bit about how that works from the genetic side?
Oh, sure. They're actually two different pigments, a blue one and a brown one. So the brown one is actually a byproduct of hemoglobin, the thing that makes blood red.
Really?
So you can break that down and turn that into a brown pigment. And the blue pigment actually comes from a bile byproduct.
So bile? Did you say B-I-L-E?
Yeah, bile. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yep. Well, you get a lot of interesting pathways to make pigments. But there's blue and there's brown. Now, if you don't put either pigment in, you get a white egg.
Okay.
If you add blue pigment, it goes all the way through. So if you've got Easter eggers or Americanas or Araucanas,
most everything.
Anyone laying a blue egg, it's going to be blue on the inside, too, when you crack the shell open.
Okay.
Brown gets laid over the shell. So if you have a brown egg and you crack it, it's white on the inside. And if you lay brown over blue, you get green.
Okay. Brown over blue.
They didn't go to my art class when we combined colors in elementary school. But
yeah, where'd the yellow go?
Yeah, brown and blue, you get green when you're dealing with chicken egg colors. But that's how you'd get an olive egger or an Easter egger that was laying green eggs, is you'd take that blue egg gene and add brown. And, you know, it is, I just saw a comment on the chat room that popped up saying a brown egg is like a spray tan.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is. It is, because the hen lays that brown pigment on top of the egg after the eggshell's already on.
Right.
If you get a freshly laid brown egg, you can rub some of that brown off.
Uh-huh.
Or you can stick the brown egg in vinegar and scrub off the brown. So it is sprayed on top of the egg.
Amazing. And they get it so smooth and so even. I mean, how do they do that?
Sometimes they do, but sometimes you get really pretty patterns with modeling and uneven pigment, which I like. I know the Wellsummer hens will lay speckled eggs sometimes.
Speckled eggs, yeah. I was going to say, you got the speckled eggs and the little
yep.
spots on them. Absolutely. So the green, the Americana eggs, that's that color through and through.
Yes. Yep, the blue egg is blue all the way through. But if it's a green egg, it's green on the outside and blue on the inside.
Interesting.
And yeah,
I knew about the brown being coated and kind of being spray painted on before it laid, but I'll be honest, I didn't know that about the Americana, and being that was through the shell, total, you know, the blue green and blue inside. Interesting.
Yeah, the blue pigments actually get incorporated into the calcium carbonate structure of the eggshell.
Obviously, the white ones aren't spray tanned with anything.
No, they're just white. Yeah, white eggs are just white.
I love that. They're getting a kick out of that in the chat room. It says a spray tan. So, you know, maybe those who sell your brown eggs, you can sell them for more now. Because they have a spray tan.
Well, I know people that do charge more for their brown eggs. You know, particularly if they're really dark, you know, chocolate brown like a Moran or a Wellsummer egg.
We would have people that would when we had our mixture of flock, that they would just want the green or blue eggs. I want a dozen eggs, but I just want blue or green. And it was like, you know, we had fewer of the Americanas than the other breeds, so we were like, you know, we did it maybe once or twice, and like, no, we're not doing that anymore. You get what you get. They'll be brown, they'll be white, they'll be green, they'll be, you know, some all kinds in there. There'll be a nice rainbow of colors in our 12 and our dozen egg carton there. But we're not not doing just the only green anymore. That was too much of a hassle. But yeah, it was interesting to see how people had their preference of brown or white or the green or the blue, and you try to explain to them that they're all nutritionally equal. And
you can't tell once you crack them.
Exactly. I agree with that. And you know, it was funny. A study came out, and I think it was Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, that was talking to me about this. And we said, or maybe it was Dr. McCray. There were when that study a few years back, apparently, or there was a study that stated that the Americana eggs were less in cholesterol than the others, but it deemed that the eggs were smaller than the others, and that's why it had less cholesterol, because the eggs were smaller, had nothing to do with the bird or the color or I guess anything like that.
There's less cholesterol in a silky egg, too.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
Fewer calories, even.
Yeah, be careful, because somebody, you know, I'll be, my mind frames, oh, no, Jen, go ahead and fix me a half a dozen silky eggs, because they're a lot less than cholesterol. It's kind of like the 100-calorie snack bags. Oh, I can have four or five of those. There's just 100 calories in them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, fix that dozen silky eggs, because they're less than cholesterol. Absolutely. I love it. Yeah, but that was a good study that came out. They were like, no, it's just in smaller eggs. So you have less cholesterol.
Yeah,
that
that's a question for you, though, Emily. Is there an effort to breed a healthier egg, a chicken that lays a more healthy egg, or is it all just the environment? You know, if they're out on free range and sunshine, they'll be healthier.
A lot of it seems to be diet. And, like, you know, you go in the grocery store and you'll see chicken eggs that say extra omega-3s in these eggs.
Right, yeah.
Right, that's mostly done with diet. You feed them more fish oil, you get more omega-3s in your eggs.
Mm-hmm.
But some of what goes into the egg is genetically controlled, like the proportion of the yolk to the white. That's genetically controlled.
Really?
So, right. Now, it's something you can't fiddle with too much, because if you make the yolks too small, they won't nourish the baby chicks and they'll never hatch.
Right.
Right? So it's hard to manipulate some of these, even though they are genetically controlled.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are, it's big business trying to make a healthier egg, because people enjoy them. And you might as well tell them they're good for them.
Right. Well, now, how about healthier chicken meat? I mean, there's always the issue about the meat not, you know, do they ever select for, like, antioxidants or better...
Not flavor, not texture,
is it just size?
Not that I know of, but I've got to admit I am not an expert when it comes to the meat production business. But what I've read on the genetics of broiler bird production, it usually has to do with growth rate and size and feed conversion. You know, how much you have to feed them to get a pound of chicken meat out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you certainly could alter the nutritional content of the birds based on what you fed them. I know there's been a lot of work done on, you know, free-range birds versus birds that are just kept in a shed and fed corn, and they do actually differ in some of the micronutrients that you'll find.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, what do you see in the future of the chicken genetics? Do we have the most super birds we can ever get, or is there... They're going to go to Petri dishes to make chicken nuggets?
Chicken nuggets in a Petri dish. God, my kids would love that. I think it's like all things. There's a lot that we could do with it. But some things are probably already pushed to their extreme. I mean, if you look at the Cornish cross that we have that we raise as broilers, they already grow so fast. I don't think
too fast.
Right, and then they can't walk.
So they can't walk. They can't breathe. They die. Excuse me. I get excited about this. It was you. I think it was telling me that literally they've got a terminal gene, pretty much, because at 6 weeks they basically can't function because they've grown so much.
Right.
Was that you?
I think so. We might have been talking about that. But yeah, we've selected for the strain that can't even be a breed. You always have to cross to get it. You have to cross a rock with a Cornish because those birds don't actually survive. So if you, and that's been done, you know, these broiler strains have been created with traditional breeding programs. And so I do sometimes wonder if we could, with artificial genetic engineering, possibly make them grow faster. They already grow so fast.
It's astonishing how fast. Well, now, what about growing it in vitro? I mean, literally, the Petri dish chicken.
There are actually some scientists that are working on growing meat without animals.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's
So far, it's the most expensive steak you could possibly buy. Like it's like $1 million
awesome.
A pound or something like that. It's incredibly expensive. but there is a push that people are looking to growing animal-less meat because the conversion rates are better and you don't have the, you know, no one's going to come and complain about how you treat your Petri dishes.
I bet the vegetarians would love that, wouldn't they? An animal-less meat.
Mm-hmm.
I guess PETA folks would be all over that, and
maybe
and,
so. Although they might start complaining about our Petri dish treatment. So
uh-oh.
That's right. You're abusing those cells. I mean, they spend all their entire lives in the dark. You know,
I know.
They never see the sun. what point is life? You know.
But you know, that's one direction that people are looking at.
Mm-hmm. So there is active research going on in that to make a hot dog without the pig, huh?
Yeah, there is. It's very far from being commercially profitable, but...
But it's possible. Okay.
It's possible. You can grow cells in the lab.
I have a question for you, and this will wrap up the show.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have the, and this would be a good a different take on it as well, with your experience and all the research that you do, because you know we've had the organic farmers on, and people hear me say this all the time. We've had the commercial farms. Some people like the term factory farm. I don't like that statement, but commercial farms, the organic farms, the free range farms, the PETA, everybody, and so we need to raise chickens this way more humanely, and you know there's all the debate out there. And
mm-hmm.
so I asked them, you know, could we raise chickens that way and feed the world without having to pay $25 for a chicken breast in the store? And I guess my question for you is, we used to, before all this genetics, the GMO corn, the GMO products and all this research, we seemed to feed the world pretty good. I'm not a history buff, so I don't know. At least in America, we seem to always, the farmers had come through. We've been doing pretty good at feeding. So I guess my question is, have we really seen an increase using genetics at food population? And has it made a difference? I know our population's grown so much, and that's a loaded 10-minute answer probably, and we've only got a couple of minutes left. But with your research and what you've seen as far as history, have we made a lot of progress in feeding the world and feeding America with our research?
I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about population growth.
Uh-huh, right.
We have. We've made a lot of progress in the amount of food that we produce. If you look at the onset of modern farming technique, it's called the Green Revolution. And we produce a lot more food, and we make more food per acre than we used to. Many arguments one way and the other way, but we do produce more food per acre than we used to.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have more people per acre.
Correct.
Than we have ever had before. And that's going to be a really big issue for the future because our population continues to grow and the planet doesn't get any bigger.
Yep.
So finding a way to feed everyone
uh-huh.
is important, but we also need to find a way to feed everyone without destroying the planet. So
right.
you end up in this really difficult situation where you need to produce sufficient quantities of food, you need to make the food sufficiently inexpensive so that people could actually afford to buy it, and then you need to make the industry sustainable. And I don't think we're there yet.
Right.
No. Listen, Emily, that's a never-ending question we're going to have to
yeah,
future
it's
generations.
It's a big issue.
We've just got about 50 seconds left, So, Whisper, any final words? You guys, the time just zipped away, but all of a sudden we're out of time.
It
any
did.
Final
it was
words, Whisper?
Fascinating. Thank you so much, Emily, for coming on. I'm sure we could have you on all week, and it never get finished with all the questions, and it just just makes my mind just spin and think about all these questions, good and bad, and it's just absolutely amazing. So thank you very much for coming on today. Very thrilling and very interesting, and kept our audience engaged the whole show. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, I've greatly enjoyed it. I'd be happy to chat anytime.
That'll be great.
Thank you.
Pat?
Thank you. Okay, our special guest today was Professor Emily Lilly. She teaches biology, molecular biology, genetics, genomics, and cell biology at Virginia Military Institute. Blessings to all. We love you all so much, and may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody. Thank you.